You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the hashtag we're most active on is the one you like the least. If you're an avid listener of this podcast, you're well aware of my skepticism of all things social media. Perhaps one of the biggest curiosities to me is hashtag activism. I'm not exactly sure what the purpose is beyond making the people tweeting feel better. As it's stated, people say the purpose is to raise awareness. My first question is, to whom and for them to do what? My second question is, what percentage of Americans use social media? Until I find out it's a significant portion, I'm going to assume that we've created an echo chamber for do-gooders and trolls to feel like their words have an effect. And in a way, that's actually quite brilliant. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I'm okay. I live in the worldwide capital of both hashtag activism and hashtag political nonsense. So, I feel you, man. It's pretty much worthless.
Do people walk around and they, like, if they're a member of the House or the Senate, does it say hashtag TCODC on their shirts?
No, it says, like, bought by Exxon. Oh. But, no. What I mean is there's a lot of grandstanding around here in the same way, in the same fashion as the hashtag activism, where you actually will see advertisements bought that's like, Senator push forward this nonsense bill that actually did nothing. Congratulate him by tweeting it. It's like that's meaningless to just about everyone.
Yeah, and they do that on all the shows now too, right? They put the hashtags up that you're supposed to use while watching. I really don't understand it. I really don't.
We watched Eliza Schlesinger last night, who's actually a very talented comedian, very funny. Almost, wouldn't say anti-feminist, but certainly comes close to being completely disassociated by the feminist movement. And, but throughout the entire show, every time she made a joke, it was like, hashtag this funny line, hashtag this funny line.
She said that?
Fuck off. No, on the screen.
Oh.
Like on the Netflix special.
Oh, it was on the Netflix special. I thought you were talking about like when you go to a concert and they're like, use this hashtag, and then they have the whole scrolling video screen with all the people tweeting from the concert next to it.
No, I'm cool if they're like, just use hashtag Schlesinger. And that would be terrible. That'd be terrible marketing. Use hashtag Eliza Rocks, you know, whatever, and to follow the tweets. But it's like, every time she said a joke, whatever the punchline was, they threw that hashtag up on the screen. Like, so every 5 minutes was a different hashtag that you're supposed to use. It's fucking annoying. Moving on!
Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
I have to say to the two of you, I think the both of you are being very cynical and pessimistic. Hashtag activism is a wonderful thing. It's really effective. I mean, I know that when those 40 Coptic Christians were beheaded today in the Middle East, I know that my president and my State Department is going to stand up and do the right thing and give a hashtag.
Hashtag non-Muslim lives matter.
That's right.
Can we turn that into a phrase instead of I don't give a fuck anymore? It's I don't give a hashtag.
I don't give a hashtag. Yeah, pretty good.
And then all the young people go, you don't give a hashtag what?
Hashtag
millennials.
This. There you go.
I thought you were going to actually defend hashtag activism, and then I was going to say, go do hashtag activism on your birthday.
Do you know how bad hashtag, I hate hashtag activism. Hate it. I loathe it. I mean, it's just bring back
it's
our girls. When Boko Haram kidnapped girls, bring back our girls. Hashtag bring back our girls. I'm like, how about you fly some fucking drones over there and just bomb the shit out of them and get our, and get the girls out.
Ooh, there. Gonna piss off the libertarians who listen.
Yeah. Well, good. Sometimes you need to piss off libertarians. Pacifist bastards. They're gonna get us all killed. Anyway, so. I don't know. No, I hate hashtag activism.
For those of you who don't know, listeners, Elliot was telling us pre-show that he had an experience on Valentine's Day that makes it, he knows now more what it's like to be a straight guy.
Perfume. You're a dude. Why are you buying perfume? You are a guy. Buy cologne. I want my men to smell like men.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to the fact that he pulled the, oh, I don't really have money to pay for this. I shouldn't be paying for all of this stuff.
I didn't fall for that shit.
Wink, hand on thigh.
No, he didn't do any of that. If he had done that, at least it would have been, I would have counted that as an improvement. I'm like, please, yes. You know, said he just complains. Well, then before, I didn't mention that before he showed up, he stopped at Amscar or one of the like cash lending places. So clearly the dude does not manage his money well because he's apparently having to get money from Amscot, which I used to do. So I know how they run businesses and I have not been to an Amscot in years. So the dude knows he has no money to spend and he was just talking up like, oh, I really can't afford this. I don't know, but if I don't get it, da 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 da. Yeah, whatever.
Is it white privilege that I don't know what an Amscot is?
I assumed it was a check cashing place.
It is. It's a cash, check cashing, money lending kind of thing.
Right, and right next door is Saul Goodman's law offices.
It's not a place you want to frequent. It's
one of more white than right now.
So, yeah, that was, thanks for reminding me.
Well, Elliot, thanks for firing the first salvo there, because no Valentine's Day would have been complete without a gender war. Let's storm the battlefield in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Shots fired as 50 Shades of Grey dominated the box office this weekend.
I totally thought when you said shots fired 50 that you were going to talk about 50 Cent for some reason, even though I have the outline right here.
50 Cent. Oh.
Justin, when was the last time I brought up a rapper without you telling me to bring up a rapper?
I don't know, man. It's just where my brain went.
Well, your brain is about to go to bondage. That's what we're about to talk about.
Oh boy.
50 Shades of Grey opened to a stunning $158 million this weekend, the best February weekend in a very long time, and in fact the highest grossing weekend since November 2013. Do you know what that means? Shades of Grey made more money in its first weekend than any movie last year. Fuck off.
It definitely beat the Atlas Shrugged trilogy.
Unbelievable. I'm going to see the numbers on that. I think it came down to the wire. The very thin wire. So, 50 Shades of Grey made a lot of money primarily because the book was an international bestseller and this is going to be the movie and it's supposed to be about sex. And Americans, especially I think in the heartland, love an excuse to go see a movie about sex other than watching porn, because that's, you know, that's real sex and this is fake sex, so it's okay. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the missed points of this entire 50 Shades of Grey dominating the box office this weekend is that the second place movie was Kingsman, The Secret Service, and that was the dutiest dude movie that has duded in quite a long time.
Was it dutier than the movie with the dude? Big Lebowski.
Is that a dude movie?
The dude. It's about the dude.
I thought that was a stoner movie.
It's about the dude. Forget it. I was making a joke.
Oh. Wah, wah.
Yeah, we just throw that joke under the bus.
Yeah. Yes,
and get in your own bus and drive over it.
Not only that, but also, it's a pretty dude movie. So, and I think this is the conflict that's being set up, right? So this hyper chick flick, 50 Shades of Grey, dominates the box office, when this other movie, which is a dude movie, gets not only, trampled on by critics, but trampled on by the chick movie. So I see, who's doing the dominating this weekend. Certainly not Mr. Grey. Maybe it's Mrs. Grey.
Isn't the problem here, though, marketing? So you told me you saw Kingsman, and I had no idea what you were talking about. And then I saw it when I was looking up the info for when I was putting together the show. And I realized I saw a preview for this like a year and a half ago, and I was like, oh, that looks like a really stupid movie about a ignorant lower class kid who gets inducted into this, you know, Secret Service society. I don't care.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not kidding you. I thought it was the sequel to The King's Speech at first. until I watched like the actual trailer, I'm like, oh no, this is something to do with
He
that.
Learned to get over his speech impediment to give a great speech to his nation. His son learned to overcome his bum knee to fight the terrorists.
Now he has to go to an urban high school and bring the gift of speech to these kids.
What if we cross The King's Speech and 21 Jump Street?
Oh, that would be a bizarre tale of stuttering. I wouldn't like that. Look, you should go see Kingsman. By the way, my girlfriend and I went to see Kingsman because I sort of looked at her. I was like, what movie do you want to see? And she looked at me and she's like, you know what movie I want to see. And I was like, all right, Kingsman, because we're that in sync. It's fairly awesome. To put it bluntly, it's not an Academy Award winner. It's certainly, I think people are going to look at Colin Firth being in this movie and go, really? Really, Colin? Really? But this movie is a ton of fun. It is nonstop action. It is nonstop over-the-top meta-ness about spy movies. At one point, the bad guy, who is Samuel L. Jackson, who speaks with an insane lisp, like a huge over-the-top nonsense lisp.
So it is a sequel.
Yes, has a conversation with Colin Firth's character about how spy movies have become too serious and too taking themselves too seriously. They're no longer over the top like the old Bond movies. So I think the movie is very well aware of what it's doing, and the movie is hyper masculine. Everything is men are awesome, men are great, the women are secondary characters, and they're there for the for the men's pleasure,
just like they should be. That's right.
So, obviously this movie is being taken to task by feminists, and in fact the review I read of it on the Metro this morning said that any man who sees it should be disgusted that he would pay money for such a thing.
That doesn't make sense. How could Kingsman be more like anti-woman and be more sexist than a movie in which a man is literally beating the hell out of a woman? I don't understand how that's possible.
The same reviewer described that movie as being quote unquote too conventional when it came to sexuality. Not can't make that up.
Wait, 50 Shades of Grey is too conventional?
Yes, too conventional when it came to sexuality. Same reviewer.
You know, there's a saying that says that good writing tells you the truth about its character or its subject. Bad writing tells you the truth about the writer.
Yeah.
So I think that this is one of those instances where we need to ask the journalist or the reviewer what he's into, if he thinks that that's conventional.
It's a woman, by the way. So there are...
sexist. Oh, my gosh.
It's not a surprise Elliot would think about somebody with sex and to be a guy, okay?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are two reasons why both of you should see this movie. Even if you don't... If you're not interested in action movies with a bizarre over-the-top plot, there are two reasons.
Do you need to give two reasons at that point? I mean, you just described every movie I love.
Oh, yes.
Action movies over-the-top plot. Okay.
Okay, but here are the two reasons. One, the action sequences themselves, the really intense fight scenes, are very innovative. They are something I've never seen before, or maybe if I have, I haven't ever seen it done this well, which is they're basically single shot action scenes that go on for like 7 or 8 minutes with no cuts whatsoever, using a little bit of the Zack Snyder speed up slow down points, but using camera angles that always focus on the main character kicking ass. So they're really long, really intense, but just really stylistically beautiful.
This is directed by Matthew Vaughn, the guy who did X3 that everyone hated.
Well, he's
did you hate it?
Improved quite a bit.
It was the script I had an issue with, not the directing.
Yeah. So that's reason number one. Really innovative action sequences that are quite cool. There's especially a scene in a fucking church that is outstanding.
It doesn't
end in the church, but it is an outstanding scene in the church. one minor, not even a spoiler, but something to enthuse. Elliot maybe as Colin Firth pretends to be gay in that scene. Second point why you should see it is, sorry, the main villain is Samuel Jackson, who is a tech, like, uber billionaire, sort of like Gates meets Zuckerberg meets Steve Jobs kind of rich, who is, his main purpose in being evil is he thinks that climate change is such a threat to humanity that he wants to literally kill billions of people in order to save the planet and ultimately save the human race.
Wow.
I need to look this up. Did I write this movie?
And he is unapologetic and he is ruthlessly evil, but in the I'm a super philanthropist and I know what's better for you kind of way. And the heroes give no apology for him. So in almost any other circumstance where you have this kind of villain, you'll still get a hero who's like, your goals are right, but your methods are wrong. Of course global warming's bad. No fucking apologies for this villain. They outright think he is the worst thing ever. Yeah. And he is. That's the second reason to see it. Also, it's just so much fucking fun.
By the way, just to interject, I should mention that a couple of nights ago I had a dream that Zack Snyder was directing, and I don't know why I thought this, but he was directing a movie about Jesus' story, but like set in modern times with lots of action scenes and stuff like that. I have no idea why. Because I remember in my dream, like Justin reacting like really like glowing. I don't know
Jesus,
why.
The Reckoning.
The Reckoning.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
Resurrection.
You'll know I'm a psychic. If a year from now, if the movie comes out and Zack Snyder's directing it, you'll know.
We've stumbled onto something here that I don't think you realize we've stumbled on.
Oh.
So this is based on a graphic novel comic book by the guy who did Kick-Ass.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yes. And also the illustrator for it is Dave Gibbons, who you may famously know as the illustrator for Watchmen.
Yes.
Who okayed Snyder's version of it. So.
What the?
I think we found a couple more allies in Hollywood here.
6 degrees of Snyder!
Yeah, it always comes back to Yes, it always comes back to Snyder.
That's tremendous. I knew it was based on a graphic novel, which I have subsequently ordered because I want to read it. But I did not know that there were other connections like that. That's very cool.
Yeah, I went to IMDb and I clicked on the writers and I was like, I recognize these names. And then Dave Gibbons popped up and there's two of the things he's known for are Watchmen. And I was like, oh, well, this makes sense now.
Yeah, it's a very good story. It's a very good story. I like it a lot. And mostly is that it doesn't demonize men. And our next story also has something nice to say about men, which is rare. It's rare that we get to say anything nice about people with penises anymore. Mm-hmm. A recent Tinder experiment proved that, quote, most men are amazing, according to Karen Chang and Paul Mestemaker of Yahoo Style. So you know this is top quality journalism. Basically what happened is, the idea is that we all know colloquially about how horrible men can be on dating sites, especially on Tinder, particularly when they're rejected by women. They can just be downright evil, say nasty things. So these two decided they wanted to set up a fake profile with a beautiful 30-year-old woman and swipe right on 1,000 profiles of men in San Francisco and another 1,000 in New York City. If you don't know what that means, that's probably, you're probably emotionally healthy. But to explain, swiping right on Tinder means you have selected them and you want to connect with them. And if the man also swipes right on you, then Tinder connects you together. So here it is. Over 1,000 men messaged Lisa, but since she was a fake profile, she didn't respond to any of them, and they were just waiting for the hostile messages to come in. Out of 1,007 men who messaged Lisa, how many would you expect turned hostile, audience? Since Justin and Elliot already know the answer.
69.
The answer, yeah. The answer is zero. Zero men turned hostile. And in fact, they break down a little chart with the words that were sent to her. The most common word was beautiful, second was pretty, third was cool, interesting, impressive, gorgeous. And then zero instances of bitch, slut, fuck, shit, fat, or ugly.
Those were exactly all the words I put in every message when I was on OkCupid. That exact order, too.
Hashtag six words you should say to every woman. So, 1,000 men's messages were ignored, and zero turned hostile. The authors were really impressed.
Impressed by men doing nothing.
Are you
nothing.
Impressed?
Exactly. Well, isn't the... They're impressed because these are mildly honest social justice warriors, right? Meaning they just assumed that there would be a deluge of terrible because that is what the mainstream media has led them to believe. That all men are just secretly waiting to either rape or beat or verbally assault women. And the moment they get a chance, especially on a site that's anonymous like Tinder, they're going to take that chance. Wrong.
Well, and it's not just the mainstream media, right? There's this whole string of memes online now where people set up sites or Twitter accounts where it's, you know, women saying, these are the awful responses I got on these dating sites. But think about that for a second. Who are the women getting the awful responses? The women who are posting about the awful responses they got, or they're soliciting responses to create a blog, like responding to Twitter messages with dashboard confessional lyrics. Don't you think that is reflective more of the women who are doing these things than it is of the people who are responding? Because if somebody approaches a girl honestly, a woman honestly online, even if he's just super forward, he's like, you want to fuck? And then she just says something bitchy to him, of course he's going to respond like a dick.
Yeah, he's already a dick, so...
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, look, I'm not sanctioning that message. Hey, wanna fuck? Like, I don't think it's a good message. I don't think you're gonna end up with what you want.
DTF?
Right. But it still doesn't necessarily warrant someone being a total bitch to him.
Does but my that's point a make microaggression, sense? Justin. That he's basically raping her. Because he's assuming that she is nothing but a sexual being.
My bad. Assuming people are sexual beings on Tinder. I thought that was the point.
Oh, how context is dropped.
Well, it's the culture, right? I mean, how many artists write music, you know, females are like, oh, there are no men, there are no good men anywhere. That was the theme of Sex in the City. Men are stupid. Men are just sex starved and they don't know how to have relationships. They're, you know, they're dysfunctional. They're this and they're that. I mean, all the shows, the nighttime shows, like all the girls oriented. The shows, that's the message that they're getting. And so, of course, you know, it's like the movie Network, you know, you have an entire generation of women who don't know anything that didn't come out of the television set from these shows. So they literally believe that there are no good men up there, out there in the world. And that's insane.
I'm glad you brought up Sex in the City because we do not talk about it enough on this show.
I never thought I would hear those words come out of your mouth.
And what I mean by that is people don't realize the effect it had on this issue. We're at this point where we are because of exactly what you said, Elliot. That entire show is about women behaving in a ridiculous, I'm going to say retarded manner, and then being like, why don't men like me? Like, they're complete bitches to guys. And they're like, why can't I find a good guy?
Much like Seinfeld, I've never watched a single episode of Sex in the City. Is that the one with the whore and the southern girl and the horse lady and the redhead?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure.
They have had very good episodes in terms of, cause I am, as a gay man, of course I watch Sex in the City and they have some very good episodes where they deal with some very smart things. But in all they have created a culture or they've seem to kind of instill this message in a lot of young women that men are unreliable, that they're just cheaters naturally. It's that meme, right? That meme that continues to perpetuate that men are irrational. They act on impulses by their bodies. They cannot think. They can't reason. They can't say no. They're just going to follow their penises and just do what they want. That men are incapable of self-control. And in a weird way, a lot of men have accepted that. They believe that now. And not just among straight guys, but gay men too. It is absurd.
Well, of course, it's the ultimate out for men, right? Yeah, you know, this ultimate out, because they've had all this sort of like, well, you know, I have to do this dance to get the woman, but now every woman believes that all I want is to fuck. Well, fuck it. let's just fuck then. And I'm, and that's just how I'm gonna put it out there. Here's my penis. You want it? No? How about you? No? How about you? No? How about you? Yes? Alright.
That's a gay club you just described right there.
Oh, I thought it sounded like Quagmire.
No, but it's like, it's just, and not only that, if I could extrapolate a little bit, even the idea of like the girl that guys want. I mean, who is the lead character? Carrie Bradshaw. She can't manage her finances. She doesn't have a savings account. She's late everywhere. She smokes and she's just, you know, a mess. Her life is a mess. But in magical TV world, guys find that charming. Guys like girls whose lives are a mess. They like girls who don't have their stuff, their shit together, even though they're in their 30s. I mean, and that's just not real life. I'm sorry, ladies, if you're listening, Katrina, you know, everybody, I'm sorry to tell you this. Men do not like women who don't have their shit together, at least relative or respective to where they are in their lives. A 20-year-old's not going to have their stuff together the way a 30-year-old will, but they have to at least have something going for them. They have to at least be able to save money or something. I don't know. But this is the truth. I believe this because I've seen it. I've talked with so many straight guys about this. They're sick of this idea that girls are a mess and that it's the guy's job just to handle that mess and not do anything, you know, and not try to improve themselves. Because if you tell them that they need to, I don't know, take control of their lives, then, you know, you're a sexist.
I'm not touching this one. That's all I'm saying. How do you feel, Daniel?
That's what most women say. I nitpick some things Elliot said, but I think the spirit is correct. But actually, on a completely different note, I want to say that the one thing other than the content that I really liked about Elliot's rant was his anti-censorship. He, in fact, at one point said, they don't have their stuff, shit together. I like how we've devolved to that level in the podcast. So.
Wait, I need to cuss.
You go from. I don't have anything to add to Elliot's tremendous rant, but someone who might have something to add is Brianna Wu,
who's
a software developer and a writer over at HuffPo Tech. She wrote an article this week called "I'm Brianna Wu and I'm Risking My Life Standing Up to Gamergate." She recounts an experience this past weekend where a man wearing a skull mask posted a YouTube video outlining his plans to murder her. She knows his real name, and she sent it to law enforcement, but apparently they don't do anything because she's had 43 other death threats in the last 5 months. Part of this is she's saying this now partly because there's a Law and Order episode that recently premiered about this Gamergate sort of / death threat nonsense.
It sounds like they didn't take her seriously because she's the bitch who cried wolf. I'm just saying.
Oh, them's fighting words. Can't wait to get into that. She goes on basically in this article to say that women don't have a voice and women live in a tech world built by men for men. She even says, for instance, software increasingly defines the world around us. It's rewriting everything about human interaction. This has disastrous consequences for women that use these systems built by men and for men. I use Twitter as it's crucial for a marketing tool for a software engineer, yet I must also suffer constant harassment. Women's needs are not heard. Our truth is never spoken. These systems are the next frontier of human evolution, and they're increasingly dangerous for us. She writes on HuffingtonPost.com. So.
There's just so many things. Like, it's dangerous for you on Twitter. What about the cave women who couldn't walk outside before being attacked by a saber-toothed tiger or clubbed over the head and dragged away?
Dragged to a cave and said, Tobar, fuck no.
Yeah, it's dangerous on Twitter. Talk about a first world problem. It's dangerous on Twitter.
Indeed. So, but what can be done about this harassment? I mean, apparently women are facing death threats every day because they're standing up to the hate group Gamergate. That's how she describes them.
And that's
a
question
hate
I have.
Group.
Please.
That's the question I have. Right? And Elliot, you know, you can probably go on another epic rant about all of this. But even in the awfully written, awfully produced Gamergate episode of SVU where they were like, oh, she's being doxxed now. Oh, look, she's being swatted. And they were just throwing in like, that's an ISP. Oh, that's a firewall. Like just lingo to make it seem like they knew what they were talking about. Even in that awful episode, they had the nuance in there that Gamergate is not everyone and it's not one person. But since when is Gamergate a group of people?
Yeah, this is the first I've ever heard it used to define a group. Like, so Elliot, could you give us a little background on that, perhaps?
Okay, well, we've discussed it on the show before, but for those of you who didn't happen to hear that one, that episode, you should go back and listen to it because all of our episodes are awesome. But the whole thing of Gamergate started because it was outed that there was a woman by the name of Zoe Quinn who was having an affair or was having a relationship with someone, maybe not even really a relationship, but they were just kind of like fuck buddies with someone
a relationship. You stop judging.
Well, I mean, it technically is a relationship, definitionally.
Their genitals are relating.
Well, the point is that, you know, when you have a gaming journalist and a gaming developer in a relationship like that, journalism ethics arises. So people started questioning. The problem is that it's a very small gaming journalist. Journalism is a very small community. There aren't a lot of outposts or outlets for people who write about games. And they're very small, they're very well connected, and they're very protective of one another. So when these ethical questions came to light, people started, you know, writing about it and asking them, well, hey, what's going on? And then they found themselves on the receiving ends of like being blocked from certain websites or having discussions completely erased, things like that. So what has happened now is that this far left feminist element has come into it, the social justice warrior element has come into it, that's basically trying to say that if you're a gamer, you are by default a misogynist person, that chances are you hate women, chances are you want to you want to eliminate them from the discussions of gaming development, things like that. And first, let me just tell you something about Brianna Wu. Okay, the chick is a drama queen. She says, oh, these people send hate mails. I'm like, hate mails threatening to kill me? I'm like, why don't you look up Dana Lash, who's on the Blaze Radio and has her show on the Blaze. Read some of the hate mails and hate tweets that she gets on a daily basis. They number in the thousands, probably. She gets them and they're threatening her, threatening her husband, threatening her children with some of the worst rhetoric that a person could ever contrive. You have to be evil to write some of the things that she gets sent. And she's not the only one. There are others as well.
Certainly, I'm not a Sarah Palin apologist, but I just remember some of the stuff that was said about her and her family and especially her special needs child. Like, it was hard for me to fathom that some of that rhetoric was real.
Yeah,
that it wasn't
Bristol,
manufactured.
The stuff they said about Bristol, about because she was pregnant out of wedlock, even though it was leftists saying that and we're supposed to have tolerance for that, like.
Right, and all I want is a single standard, right? So if you're gonna be upset about Brianna Wu and the death threats, why not also be upset by Sarah Palin and the death threats?
Because she doesn't agree
with you on certain issues. Okay, I got it now.
Yeah, because there's an ideology at play here. The far left, and Brianna Wu is kind of the current face of that right now. It's this, you know, feminist, you know, anti-male element that is coming to Gamergate, where anybody and everybody who is a male who works in video games, you are suspect now. You are misogynistic. I mean, and there may have been people who, under the guise of being part of Gamergate, have sent threats, but they're usually exposed by other people in Gamergate who expose these guys and say, hey, this is not one of us. He doesn't represent us. We need to expose him and show him up. Because that's probably how she found out about this other guy as well. The guy who did send her the threats.
That's one point of clarification, though. You say in Gamergate. Do you just mean in participating in the #/scandal of it all, or do you mean that there is some organized mechanism for Gamergate?
No, it's uniting under a banner, basically, but to my knowledge, there really isn't anything organized there. These are just gamers who want to play games, and they're tired of, you know, the women involved are tired of being used as shield by these feminists, and, you know, gays are tired of being used by these kind of gay activists that are trying to, you know, add gay people to every single freaking video game, like, that's necessary. And they're just tired of it. It's just regular people, and they're just kind of uniting under a banner.
All right, ready? This is another thing you never thought you'd hear me say.
Mm.
This is where there is actually something I can respect about Deflategate.
What? Are you on crazy pills this week? What is going on?
At least we know when it's going to end. When they release that report, whatever it is, even if it's in 2020, that's it. That's the end of it, right? Issue settled. We can look at it. We can talk about it if it's in the past. Explain to me when Gamergate is going to end. What is the end point here?
All males are castrated.
Basically.
I'm just giving you a potential end point.
Who had an abortion because she didn't want to have a boy. I mean, why is that not a hate crime? I mean, I know legally there are reasons why it's not, but why isn't that, if a woman were to do that to a baby girl, in to the extent that they are a girl in the womb, why isn't that met with the same level of out? Feminism has become creepy. You're talking about people who actually brag on Facebook about how they want to to do circumcision on their babies because just specifically to not allow their boys to experience pleasure sexually when they get older. I mean, they're so warped. It's just insane. To be a man is to be evil, to be rotten. That's what has happened now.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy, totes. Crazy. I don't understand a lot of the Gamergate stuff still. I mean, I understand the principles behind it. I don't understand a lot of the specifics behind it. But would you say that there is someone prominent that we could read who is on the opposite side of Brianna Wu, for instance?
Yes. Yiannopoulos, we've read it.
Not the guy from Heroes, Elliot. We've been over this.
It's Milo Yiannopoulos. Although that is
I would read a pug any day. Go ahead.
But he was the guy who wrote the Sexodus articles that we discussed. He's been writing endlessly, and he writes about Brianna Wu and about Zoe Quinn. I mean, and he's merciless. He's just bitchy and snarky and and fabulous. I mean, because he just doesn't pull punches. He does not care about the hate mail. He brags about it, basically, if he gets it. He writes about and defends the people involved in Gamergate because he knows what's at stake. So, definitely read him. I think Brandon Morse, you should definitely read some of his stuff too. His stuff is mostly on Twitter. He doesn't really write a lot about it, I think, for any publications, but on his blog, you definitely read it there. So those guys, you definitely want to read and follow along and see what's going on.
Will do.
All right. Thanks. Well, Valentine's Day destroyed the relations between the genders and it also destroyed a marriage. Let's see what the weekend did to the Underwoods in TV with JML. Over the weekend, or last week, whenever it was, I don't know, I don't keep up with this show, the season 3 teaser was released for House of Cards, and apparently it's spelled MARITALTROUBLE, and I just went to a lot of trouble for that joke.
What about our illiterate listener? They're just left in the dark.
Go to the library, learn to read a book, or email me for Skype tutoring.
Sales bitch. This is actually one of several teasers that has sort of come out for Game of Thrones. Now that I live in DC and see the actual brutality, it's less fun.
Frank Underwood crossed over to Game of Thrones?
I would watch the fucking show. That'd be the only reason. No, this is, and so in this teaser, basically the president and the first lady are taking did I just spoil it? Did I just spoil like part of the show if you haven't watched it yet? Yeah. I think I did.
Yeah, spoiled season 2 House of Cards.
Okay, we need to insert a spoiler alert.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
Okay, thanks. They're taking a photo and Frank puts his hand on his wife's shoulder and she sort of gives this little involuntary shrug, and he goes, why I thought you were my wife, what the fuck, Zuck? And she says, you're reading too much into it, and then that's it. It's actually, I mean, it's a fairly effective trailer or teaser, but it's actually very, doesn't give anything away, which I think is probably the best thing you could do with a teaser, right? Overall, I am unbelievably excited for season 3 of House of Cards. I rewatched seasons 1 and 2 in anticipation of all these episodes premiering on February 27th on Netflix. And there are so many loose ends that it just really makes you appreciate the name of the show, because it's sort of like, how do you take these many, many disparate possible plot points and integrate them into one seamless story that has a valid conclusion, not like Lost. That doesn't end in a church.
That's my joke.
I'm sorry, I keep stealing your joke.
You were good. I was going to make that joke, and then you took it.
I'm so sorry, Totten.
You took my joke.
Jerks. Oh God, we are high on this show. Yeah. So like watching season 1 and 2 and just the insane complexity of the plots there, and then the sort of tremendous open-endedness of the end of season 2, I'm giddy. I'm wetting myself waiting to see what President Underwood does with his country. And believe me, it is his country.
Speaking of somebody trying to do something with something that isn't his quite yet, there's been much speculation about who's going to replace Jon Stewart. And we'll get to that later, Jon Stewart leaving The Daily Show. But one seemingly prime candidate would be Joel McHale, who does The Soup on ETV and is also known for Community. But the very surprising thing is, in this article from Variety, he said, I don't think I'm smart enough. Let that sink in for a minute. He doesn't think he's smart enough to do The Daily Show. What do you guys think of that?
Smart enough to give comedy news? Doesn't he already do that? Like, hasn't he already done Talk Soup?
That's exactly what that show is. So why is it he thinks there's a difference in the media between the way they cover reality TV and entertainment news and actual news? Because I don't see a difference in the way those are covered. Does he? Do they?
Maybe. Does she? How about them? Will he? More questions at 6.
With pronouns. Remember the pronouns.
Yes. So I think there is a perception issue here, which is that people perceive The Daily Show and The Colbert Report as being hyper smart, as being the intellectual side of the news because their humor is so refined. But I think that is a perception and not a reality, having watched a ton of The Daily Show, especially early on. I actually wrote a conference paper about The Daily Show. I don't know if you knew that, Justin. I presented at a communications conference, which means I'm totally legit. You might call me a Daily Show expert. Please don't. But I don't know. I think that other comics sort of see what Jon Stewart does as being the pinnacle of intellectual comedy on the left. Maybe how Writers Center comics see what Dennis Miller does as being the pinnacle of intellectual comedy on the right. The difference being one is actually intelligent and one is only perceptually intelligent.
I think The Daily Show has dumbed everybody down. It's dumbed down the culture. So, I mean, I don't know how you, if you're really not smart enough to do The Daily Show, you're pretty damn dumb. Personally, I think.
Who would you want to see as the host of The Daily Show? If you could choose anyone.
Ooh. Bill Burr.
He can't be the answer for, who would you want to do? Bill Burr. I was about to say officiate your wedding. Bill Burr.
Yeah, I would want Bill Burr to officiate.
Circumcise your child. Bill Burr.
No, you drop context there.
I would love Gutfeld to do that, but I mean, I like Red Eye so much that I wouldn't, but I could see Gutfeld taking it over and just completely revamping it. Because I think Gutfeld's actually smart. He plays dumb on the show, but he's actually smart. And I think, believe it or not, I think he would be fair and criticize both sides because he does.
Would he also be balanced? Would he be fair and balanced?
Nah, he wouldn't be balanced, but he would be fair.
Maybe he would pick on a balanced beam.
But he would shit on everybody, and that's what you want. You want somebody. The problem with Stewart is that he doesn't shit on everyone.
Well, hold
on. You know who I think they should get? I think they should get Craig Kilborn. Whatever happened to that guy? No, actually, someone brought up on the Adam Carolla show that there was a fake story about Adam Carolla being tapped to do the Daily Show, and I actually thought that's not a terrible idea. It'd be a very different kind of show, but not an awful idea. Here's my thing about it. Like, if you want to keep the Daily Show on the air without Jon Stewart, fine, but you're not going to be able to keep it in the same direction. You're not going to be able to do what Jon Stewart did. He was a particular kind of idiot.
Well,
so you have to find
a
different kind of idiot.
Isn't that what they do with every late night show? Hosts, a new direction? I mean.
Yeah.
But new life, new direction.
When you look at, for instance, the other sort of late night shows that come up, like the John Oliver one and now the one with the black correspondent whose name I don't remember very racistly.
Tyrese?
No, but thanks for foreshadowing. No, but they're basically doing the exact same Jon Stewart model, and that's why they're not doing as well. Do something different.
I have a feeling that that the next person that they tap for this, for the Daily Show, I don't know, like, just because of the influence of the social justice warriors, I have a feeling it's going to be somebody like Aisha Tyler or somebody like that.
She's actually funny, so it's okay, and she's not that leftist.
She's not that leftist. So that would be awesome if they sort of did that and they're like, yeah, we're going to get the man. We're going to get a black woman. And then she like totally becomes libertarian on their ass. That would be tremendous.
Yeah. I'd enjoy that actually. That's it. I'm for Aisha Taylor. That's my answer.
Well done, Elliot.
Yeah.
I think you picked the ideal person to take over the Daily Show.
Well, she did do Talk Soup and she hosts,
Joel McHale. She's smart enough.
Yeah, she can do this. She can do the Daily Show.
Cool.
All right, now that that's settled.
Done and done. You're welcome, Comedy Central.
Do you have any follow-ups on Fresh Off the Boat, Daniel?
Watched the other two episodes. I thought they were not as strong, but still not going in a terrible direction, in my opinion, which I think is the worst possible thing for the show. I think the mother continues to be just fucking hysterical. Just unbelievably funny. And then the scene that had me laughing the hardest is there's an episode where they're trying to sort of out-compete their brothers and sister-in-law about how wealthy they are. But the brother brings in a computer with internet access, except this is 1993 in the show. So they're dialing up on AOL. And they're just staring at the computer for like three scenes while it's booting up the internet and just making that noise. And every time they cut back to them, they're just staring at it in anticipation. That had me laughing.
Yeah, that's actually my biggest problem with the show, though, is the fact that they decided to set it in the 90s. Is it just makes it seem like it's less about the situation and it's more about, I mean, obviously the time period, the setting is part of the situation, but it's less about the fresh off the boat part, and it's more about, hey, look at these funny things that were in the 90s.
I think there is some of that. I'm okay with that, personally. I think as long as they're doing that and not taking it in the social justice warrior direction, I'm okay. They're just making it a sitcom with an Asian family. But they did do a fresh off the boat joke with that, right? When he gets a phone call from the office, or he calls the office to talk about reservations, and he calls the restaurant he owns to talk about reservations. Eventually I will learn to speak human. And he says to the guy, I can't compete with my brother, he's got a noise making box. I don't know. I thought that was funny. But I like it still. I think it's funny, and it's funnier than other stuff that's on TV, so I hope it doesn't get canceled.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's a strong mid-season show, and I'm also going to make a bold prediction. Constance Wu is going to win an Emmy for her performance.
She should. She's tremendous.
I don't know if she should. I mean, she is good. I don't know if she should, but she's going to win it simply because it's strong. It's a strong performance, and she's an Asian woman. So she's going to win it.
As long as it's not someone from goddamn Modern Family, that's all I have to say.
All right, so no Valentine's Day could be complete without a gender war. without a marriage breakup, and no Valentine's Day could be complete without Reddit? It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
Awesome beards, Reddit gears, our jailbait no longer fits like that if a firefly, spending too much time online. Backman's face should be shot, can we legalize pot? TAE, feel like this, better drink my own piss. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA blows, Steam rocks, God rest for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit, mostly pics of felines, comma whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, and this isn't me saying this, this is me quoting, says, I'm a 17-year-old waitress who just had her first experience with sexual harassment at work. Did I do the right thing? Now, there's a TLDR here. It says, guy harasses me at work and I get all legal with it and call him out using Title IX. Not sure if it was a good idea. So to give a little more context here, she has a brief little paragraph of what she said, and I want to read it because it's fucking ridiculous. I have no idea how this idea popped in my head, but before I knew it, I had blurted out, well, have you heard of Title IX of the Civil Rights Act of 1964? I then went on to explain how a large part of Title IX was the... Title VII? Title VII.
I was waiting to correct you. That is actually your fault.
Sports.
Right. Title sports. IX is discrimination in sports.
She's not a waitress. This is my perspective on this story.
Justin can't read Roman numerals, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, this is how the media has brainwashed me. I've automatically assumed she was talking about Title IX.
Yeah, she was being discriminated against in her polo club.
Anyway, so I'm still going to say it. Then went on to explain how a large part of Title VII was the prohibition of sexual harassment in the workplace and explained that his actions fell under the umbrella of what sexual harassment is. I explained how I could easily have had him fired, but I told my boss not to fire him just yet. I didn't want to be the bitch who got a guy fired with no warning. Since I'm technically still a minor, he could get into a lot of trouble, and I made sure to tell him that he was directly breaking the law. After about 6 minutes of legal jargon, I think he got the point.
Yeah. Alright. I don't know about this. Stop throwing around threats of lawsuits. First, here's the thing. You tried talking to him first. That was correct. Well done. You're awesome. Second, you went to hiding and not talking to workers and avoiding him and then legal action. How about just simply going to your boss first and saying, this guy is making me feel uncomfortable. I'd like you to have a talk with him. I'm not asking that you fire him. Just have a talk with him. That could be one step. Ultimately, though, I can't fault her in general because she didn't run immediately to some government official to solve her problem. Right. So she didn't actually initiate a lawsuit. She didn't ask police officers to step in. She didn't do any of that stuff. So she just threatened, which fine in the end. I'm just saying that there are other steps she could have taken. But
now, question, did she describe anywhere on that thread what he exactly did to her?
He said, what, where? It's
he gave
here.
Her some nickname she refuses to say because it's so embarrassing. And then he looked at her.
Just the standard things, she says. Like catcalling, inappropriate nickname, and dropping things on the floor for me to pick them up. So apparently he was a boss from the 60s.
She should work at Disney. You should hear some of the things we get from the guests. Guests like to harass cast members. You should work at Disney. You want to see real harassment.
Yeah, she should work at Disney and go stand alongside Gaston. Jeez.
Gaston.
So genuine sexual harassment, I think, is bad. I know that's a controversial statement on this show. But there are some things that I don't, like, what is the difference between including someone in your social group and being really open with them versus sexual harassment? I'm not saying that's what this is in this case. I'm asking a more general question.
I only know if it's sexual harassment if a panda comes out and sings after it happens.
Sexual harassment. I watched that the other day too. It was awesome. But for instance, Faiza is a waitress, my girlfriend, and she talks all the time about how the female coworkers are insanely sexual at the various places she has worked over the years. And usually it's the men who refuse to say anything even remotely close to that because they're afraid of harassment policies. But the women all the time are like, yeah, I'd tap that to guys or slap them on the butt or whatever. And she's like, I just thought that, you know, that was also prohibited, but apparently it's not.
Hold on. I'm going to stop recording right now and we're going to take a break so I can apply for some jobs at restaurants.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to know where the legitimate line is, where you guys think the legitimate line is between involving someone in your peer group who you work with versus legitimate sexual harassment.
Look, the best thing to do is just don't discuss this sort of thing at work. What you do outside of work is whatever, but you know, don't discuss it while you're actually getting paid. Don't do it while you're on the floor. Whether you're a waitress, whether you're working in the office, whatever.
Floor is a technical term for the area in which the work is being done.
Right. Only do it when you're up against the wall.
Yeah.
Up against
the wall.
That's right. Or the counter, or the sink, or the tub. No, the point is, you know, just avoid the conversation in the first place. Not all conversations are appropriate all the time. You know, use your reason. Use your rational faculty.
Yeah, but what Daniel's talking about is, you know, maybe he was attracted to her and he wanted to make like a flirty comment. And is that sexual harassment? So if you say, hey, nice shirt, it looks good on you, is that sexual harassment and that can't be talked about?
No, it's not sexual harassment. But I mean, there are sometimes you just need to wait till you're out of work before you make a comment just to be on the, just to be smart.
Look, I agree with you. I agree with you in general, Elliot. I think the one thing I would say is, there are contexts for work which are way more laid back than, say, like an office setting. Like,
right.
Like what a waitress and waiters do, there's a lot of downtime and standing around talking to each other, and you're all sort of young usually and in the same peer group age. And it's a lot of it like, hey, let's go have drinks after work or whatever, even in, just in a social setting. And you work in a place that usually serves alcohol, and after work you get a 50% discount or whatever it is. So it's a very different kind of atmosphere, which is what she was doing, right? She was a waitress.
Yeah.
So, yeah, suit and tie, very different kind of atmosphere. Waitressing, you might have to have a different sort of standard for this. But if it becomes, if you have said, for instance, I don't want to participate in that, and it continues to happen, then I think it's definitely an example of harassment and it should be stopped.
Right. To me, a lot of it depends on the individual and what each individual is comfortable with. And you have to be able to communicate that in a way that isn't, do you know what the Constitution says?
Yes.
No, it's
Title,
just... not,
Title 9 of the Constitution says.
Article. No, it's just, but it's,
do you know
just...
what FEMA would say about this?
It's just a matter of being smart. Just be smart. That's all. Think.
But
not all conversations are necessarily appropriate all the time. If you like somebody, wait till you're outside of work. Wait till you're clocked out and then let them know.
I wanted to ask this question specifically. We don't have to spend too much time on this. But because when I was in grad school and I was going through this sort of, when I was becoming a student teacher, we had to go through this sexual harassment training. Like, what the problem I have with sexual harassment is that it is almost completely undefinable. And in fact, the two sexual harassment seminars I had to go through both had the exact same definition, or I should say anti-definition of sexual harassment, which is, quote, sexual harassment is whatever a group of your peers defines as sexual harassment.
Yes, and based upon that standard in that peer group, I was basically already accused of sexual harassment. Because there was, you know, they said the part about, make sure you don't have relationships with the students. And everyone laughed and was like, ha ha, Justin. And I was like, I don't even talk to women because I'm afraid of them. Like, why is everyone looking at me just because I look 18?
Exactly. So first of all, if we're going to have sexual harassment laws, which fine if we do, but define it. Give me an actual objective definition of what it is. The problem is that I think in many cases you can't do that.
That's why I say just leave it for when you get out of work. Don't be on this, err on the side of caution.
But Elliot, if you do that, the terrorists have won.
Listen, Ron Paul. All right.
So I just think the thing to me about this is, her parents must be lawyers, because who is just like, yeah, Title VII as their way of defending themselves? Like, it seems to me that, you know, yeah, I'm sorry this happened to you and you were made to feel uncomfortable. That sucks. I just wish you knew a better way of communicating it to someone. Because a line cook at a restaurant who's sexually harassing a 17-year-old girl probably isn't aware of Title VII, and the second you start saying that stuff just tunes you out.
Yeah.
Just staring at her boobs.
Pretty much. Next Reddit. What are you surprised is still in business?
The federal government?
Much. The Fed.
It's interesting. That's a fun question. I mean, I certainly think there are things I drive by and look at FISA or whoever and say, do they really make money? Like, do they make enough money to keep paying the rent for that building?
Thank you. That was my answer. I do not understand how economics work because whenever I go into any city or like a small town or that's pretty much it.
a principality, a village. A small province,
but
a region
when I go
in Italy.
There and I look mm-hmm. at all these stores that are open and like, you know, they're independently owned, I say the same thing you do. How do they have enough money? How do they really make enough money to make rent? A good example is in Culver City, Daniel, you must have seen these. They have like the antique stores that are open like 2 hours a day. What? How do they still pay rent?
I remember there was like a furniture store there that held this bizarre modern furniture in it that I always wanted to go in just to look. And I never got to go in the 2 years I lived there because I never saw it open.
Yeah.
Like they had open hours posted, which they did not live by. Or sometimes I would drive by and be like, fuck, they're open, but I've got to go to a meeting.
Sorry, I had to cancel our meeting. That furniture store is open.
But... So here's one that I have no idea how they stay open, and which is that store, which I think for the longest time I just called FYE, but I think it's F-Y-E. Maybe, what does that stand for?
For your enjoyment.
Okay, your entertainment.
Yeah. Oh, no, entertainment, yeah. And they're
Do
an offshoot.
Do people buy physical CDs
they're
and DVDs?
They're an offshoot of Strawberries, which was big in the 90s.
A what?
That must have been a Massachusetts thing.
I think so.
But yeah, I mean, that's the same thing with Best Buy, right?
Yeah. With Best Buy, yeah, I mean, people buy cables and shit, but like, do people buy physical media? Who are these people? Can we kill them?
I mean, it's gotta be FYE's on its way out with Blockbuster, probably. Give it a few
years. Yeah.
Well, I'm still surprised Redbox operates sometimes. I mean, I don't get it.
No, dude, Redbox is like super cheap. It's like a dollar and you go over there and it's super convenient. Redbox makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean like with Apple TV and iTunes, you don't have to leave the house.
But it's more money.
But you have a whole selection and you don't have to leave the house.
But iTunes, it's $5 a pop for a movie, right?
But you don't have to leave the house.
Elliot is really fixated. I'm
but
not
see,
leaving his goddamn
There's a Redbox across the street for me. So if I drive across the street, I save $4.
God, you're so American. I drive across the street.
No, if it's snowing, he'll take off his shoes and walk across the street, remember?
Yes. So that, I mean, that's one thing. For people who sell physical media other than books, I don't really understand. And even books getting a little shaky in how those stay open. I understand that people still like to touch it, but I have DVDs, okay, amount of them. Seriously, I'm going to learn to speak one day. A decreasing amount of them, but I still have them, but I have not watched a DVD in over 3 years, I think. Like a physical DVD.
I miss Borders bookstore. I'm not going to lie.
Borders.
I miss
Barnes & Noble was always better.
That's besides the point.
I mean, wasn't there a whole campaign to get rid of them, Countries Without Borders or whatever?
Countries Without Borders. What a fucking stretch for that joke. Countries.
No, Justin is Ron Paul.
What other things? What other things are bizarre to you that are still open?
I already said my thing. I don't understand how any of
them
is still open.
How about giant department stores like Sears? Who goes to a Sears anymore?
A lot of people do.
When?
I go on Saturdays because they have them at the mall.
What do you buy at a Sears?
Clothes.
Can't you buy your clothes online for half the price and not have to leave your home?
No, you, I wish you could, but some of us are a little rotund in our figures, and we need to actually wear the clothes before we buy them.
All right, so there's our answer. It's Middle America.
Fucking Middle America, keeping Sears alive. They even had to sell the naming rights to their building in Chicago. It's no longer the Sears Tower. Did you know that?
Really? No, I didn't know that.
It's the Willis Tower. In fact, residents of Chicago are so mad about the change that they call it the Big Willie.
Big Willie style. That should be Philadelphia. But when it was sold, did it say Sears Tower sold? What you talking about?
What you talking about, Willis?
All right.
No, they just had a one day only sale for it.
That's good.
I can't believe Dunkin' Donuts is still open because Krispy Kreme is just superior.
No, it's not. Get out of here. Get out of here. You are kicked off the podcast. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Blasphemy! Although if you had like one of the fresh off the conveyor belt Krispy Kremes, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God, they're wonderful. Ugh, love them.
All right. Next Reddit. What's something you firmly believed to be true for a long time but later found out was false?
Oh wow.
That the store FYE was pronounced Phi.
That Title 7 and Title 9 were the same thing.
That Pluto was a planet.
Yeah, that was one.
It was a planet, though, for a long time.
Okay, here's one that is actually fairly recent, but was fairly ongoing and is mildly embarrassing. Maybe even crossing into like absurdly embarrassing. I absolutely firmly believed that it was Benedict Cumberpatch. I've written it down several times as Benedict Cumberpatch.
Oh my God.
One corrected me for years. Years no one corrected me.
You even watched Sherlock.
I know. I think I have like a weird form of dyslexia that flips the letters vertically instead of horizontally.
Right, we talked about it before. Here when we blew up the statistic, but the statistic of the amount of sexual assault / rape on a college campus.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was repeated so much.
Yeah. It was just basically ingrained in the subconscious as true.
I got one that's that might blow your minds.
Oh. Hmm. That you were straight?
No. Matthew Shepard... I just read, I've been reading articles about this book that came out a couple of years ago that's now starting to get a lot of traction.
I thought I was lost because Matthew Fox, Jack Shepard.
That Matthew Shepard, for those of you, the listeners who are younger, don't know, he was killed and basically like crucified, like chained.
Yeah, he wasn't just killed. That was horrific.
It was terrible, but it turns out that it was not a gay bashing. He actually, one of the guys who killed him had been in a relationship with him. He was killed over a drug deal that went wrong.
Are you serious?
I am serious. He was not killed because he was gay. One of the guys who killed him was someone with whom he had been in a relationship, or at the very least had sex with.
Mind blown.
Telling you. And it's funny because gays do not want to believe this story, but the book is so well researched that everyone who has read it has changed their minds. Like, they have become convinced of it. And it's something that especially the gay activists, the gay left, they do not want to admit that this book exists.
It's something Big Gay doesn't want out in the public.
Exactly. Big Gay does not want it out. I don't know the name of it. I will find it out for you because I haven't read it myself yet, but I've read a ton of research and things that have come out of it. Then I will
like the Facebook page because Elliot will post that on the page.
Yeah, I'll find it.
Like it before the Homo Mafia shuts us down.
Oh yeah.
I'm that literally floored me.
You literally fell on the floor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I muted the mic so you couldn't hear it, but that happened.
Mm-hmm. He just fell over and twitched.
Yeah, now that this
is a lie.
It doesn't mean that gay bashings don't happen. Let me qualify. It doesn't mean that people aren't killed because they're gay. After all, look at the Middle East. They like to drop gay people off of buildings there.
Hey, but it's anti-Muslim. How dare you?
Oh,
how dare you, sir? Okay.
But Elliot, there isn't a more point about this. This is the same thing as the rape statistic.
Yeah.
It makes you question reality. If gay bashing is that much of an issue, why do they need to make one up like this? Is it because gay men aren't being horribly killed all over the country? Because that's what I think. I don't think there's an epidemic of gay men being killed like this, so they had to invent one.
Is it horrible gay-on-gay crime?
There's actually a lot of gay-on-gay crime going on, is what's going on.
There is a lot of gay, actually.
And it's fabulous!
No, you know what? You get my point, though, right?
Oh, I do. This is a narrative. Believe me, as a gay man, this is something that shaped me when I was growing up, because I remember when Matthew Shepard was killed. And you, I mean, it's one of those things that just, it just affects your life when you remember it. So when you actually read these records, because the author of that book, and I will find that name, he spoke to friends and family members, people who knew not just Matthew Shepard, but knew the men that killed him. And the things, I mean, that are just blatantly true, because the people that knew them corroborated them when they wrote, you know, and in this evidence that he put together, it blows your mind to realize that you've been operating under a narrative. And gay people do not, like the gay left does not want to admit that this is true. They do not want to admit that this book exists. They want to keep the platonic hero Matthew Shepard alive in their minds so that they can wave him like a banner whenever they try to sue bakers or bed and breakfast owners.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think this might be the most impactful podcast we've ever recorded. Mm-hmm. If this changes one mind of our audience, then we've done our job.
All right, I don't think we're going to top anything with that in Reddit possibly ever. So, our daily grind is getting kind of boring. How about we introduce a new segment? Let's check Jon Stewart into Philosophy Rehab. I can figure it out, but I'm gonna need a little help to get me. Need a little help to get me! As we all know, and we talked about earlier, Jon Stewart is leaving The Daily Show to pursue whatever, I have no idea, he's just being Jon Stewart. And recently the New York Post, the ever-controversial Kyle Smith, have you guys heard of that writer?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wrote an article called How Jon Stewart Turned Lies into Comedy and Brainwashed a Generation. What did you guys think of the article? What do you think of that claim? What do you think of Jon Stewart?
So I think in Jon Stewart's off time, he definitely needs to check himself into our philosophy rehab, because he has a lot of reflecting to do. And I think, of course, the first step into solving these issues is admitting he has a problem, and particularly he has a problem with lying. Not just lying sort of outright, sort of politician kind of lying, but lying in a way that he can delude himself into thinking it's true and delude himself into thinking he's doing something moral and right and good with the world. So I definitely agree with the sentiment of this article. It's rather snarky at points. I liked it. But basically the idea is that, and I've been saying this for years, by the way. This is in my conference paper. I'll send it to you. No, I actually can't. My computer died. Shit. But he's saying that Jon Stewart covers up what he does in the veil of what I do as a comedy show. So when you call him on his bullshit, when you say that's wrong, that's a lie, that's a misquote, or you back him down into a corner logically, his automatic out has always been for years, hey, what the fuck do you want from me? I'm followed by a show that is crank yanking puppets. Like, and that's such a deluded view of reality. He is completely disconnected. He is completely Jon Stewart centric.
So you believe that he honestly says that? He believes that's true when he says it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Because to me, that's obvious manipulation.
But I think it is so, I think it is manipulation, but I think it's manipulation that he is so bought into that for him it is the truth. That, of course, that still makes him responsible. I don't think he loses responsibility for what he's doing, but I think he has said it to himself so many times that it is now the truth for him.
Elliot, do you have anything to say?
I can't stand Jon Stewart. Can't stand The Daily Show. I don't really give a shit. That's pretty much all I can say.
But would you treat him if he walked into our rehab facility?
Would I treat him? Mm-hmm. It would be like a tough love kind of thing. Here's the thing. It's not that he's not funny. There are times where he's really quite funny, you know, and he makes me laugh. And when he does his episodes where he's fair and he goes after everybody, those are the episodes I enjoy more. But the fact that he doesn't, that and on a he doesn't do it on a consistent basis, that it's very clear where his ideological bent is, it just, I don't know, like, I think we should just inject him with Thorazine, wrap him in a straitjacket, and toss him into the dungeon.
Well, that's one one prescription. Daniel, what do you prescribe to him?
No, I prescribe that he stop taking the daily doses of factual relativism, because I think that part of the bad philosophy that he needs rehabbed is where he believes that there is no objective truth, or at least there's no way to objectively report on the truth, and that he should take a daily dose of honestly looking at the world and reporting to himself what actually happened, what is actually going on, looking at events and actually and analyzing them honestly without this preconceived terministic screen of notions that he's been using for years on the Daily Show.
I agree, and along with that, I would have him eat some humble pie. Because just because you're funny and just because you are on a national platform daily doesn't mean that you understand all of these things to the point that you can make someone like Joel McHale think he's not that smart. So just take some humble pie, eat some humble pie, and realize, you know, what your actual value is and worth is to the world. And I'm not saying he's not smart, and I'm not saying he's a bad person. I'm just saying I think because of the platform he was given, he has a heightened sense of self-importance. You don't see Jimmy Kimmel doing this. You don't see Jimmy Fallon doing this.
I think he's smart and a bad person, but moving on.
All right, let's put a cap on this. What did we learn this week?
I think we all fucking learned that we've been lied to about Matthew Shepard. Had our minds blown. Jesus. That was the biggest reveal of the show for me.
And I learned the difference between Title VII and Title IX.
Mm-hmm. Namely, completely different Roman numerals.
And a whole different generation and no sports.
And if you learned something this week, why don't you tell us on Twitter? Tweet at The Midside, let us know what you learned, and follow us on Facebook. Yes, we have a new Facebook page growing from the ground up, where we're going to relate to you some of the stories that we thought were absurd this week with a little bit of commentary. Why don't you go ahead and go over to Facebook, search for Welcome to The Midside. Like that, share with friends, tell your besties that this is the place to be every week for the most insightful, ridiculous, absurd, awesome commentary ever! Also 5 stars on iTunes. Thank you! Thank you. Good night.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into The Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Aren't there like 7 steps between your first thing and your last thing?
Like maybe learning the difference between Title VII and Title IX.
That's one difference, doing some goddamn research for the show for once. Just kidding. Justin does 86% of all research for the show.
Yeah.
That's low.
That was making us look better. Shut up.